Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider here in a few moments. See Vancouver starting to win just at the right time. Just to get out of the Bedard sweepstakes.
Crazy.
Now they're going to win.
You got to somewhat be happy for those guys, though.
I wouldn't be if I was a fan.
Well, if you're a fan, you're like, you just took yourself. You could have went the other way.
Right.
But they've already got Pettersson. They've got Quinn Hughes. They've got different pieces there. I'm happy for them. Well, I'm happy for Rick Tocchet going in there. Their goaltender's back. And I said to somebody the other day, they're looking like a hockey team right now.
Well,
as opposed to not even close. When Jimmy said major surgery, now they look like a professional NHL team.
And you know what they'll do? They'll convince themselves that they are, and now it won't be major surgery, and the same thing will happen
well,
next year.
Well, then we'll lose it if that happens. On a personal note, like Patterson's had his best year, and so was, I think Hughes didn't. Hughes break the record.
Hughes has been really good.
Like he's been.
Yes.
But he needs help. Like they brought in that Hronek. I think that Hronek might be a player. Watching him from Detroit, like he's a 25-year-old solid defenseman, but the timing of it stinks because if you are in a situation, how good, even if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, you've gone through the pain of injuries and inconsistencies, you've fired Brucey, all of that stuff. It's been an absolute PR nightmare for the Canucks this year, mostly like on the ice and off the ice. Because they've had some stuff happen off the ice, too. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, you're probably going, we got a chance at potentially at the kid from our backyard.
That's the whole point, Noodles, is I have seen this. This is flashbacks of the Leafs. Now, they have better players than the Leafs had at that point. Mm-hmm. Pettersson in particular, Quinn Hughes in particular.
Right.
But I remember saying this a couple weeks ago. They'll run off a 15-4 stretch.
10-12.
And what they'll say is, oh, next year we're up for the President's Trophy. We'll just extrapolate that. It doesn't work that way.
I'm going to say, I usually agree with your approach, but it's a big offseason for the Vancouver Canucks, and I think they're going to make the playoffs next year.
You think they're making the playoffs?
100.
Hunch. Well, you got it. Who's coming out?
Well,
who's coming out?
I don't care.
Now, the wild card teams are not that good. Winnipeg's going to get in by default.
Thank you very much.
The Winnipeg Jets
are going to have playoff hockey, or the Vancouver Canucks will be playing playoff hockey in Vancouver
and
next
Seattle
year.
Might have a reset. Like, there's, you know.
There you go.
We can't, listen.
There you go.
We can't. I can't even tell you what
he just loves to be negative. That's
no,
what he
does. I like to be honest. I like to be objective.
He's not. Listen, in this situation, he's not wrong from a fan's perspective. The fans out there are going, okay, fired the coach. It's been a terrible season. You know, Demko was supposed to be out for 6 weeks. He was out for like 4 months, 3 months. Like it didn't go well.
I think the same as you, Hayes. And if they're garbage next year, and if they're in last place at Christmas time, I'll say,
but they're not going to be in last place.
You fooled me again, and shame on me.
They're too good. They were too good to bottom out this year.
But we said that
the minute the goalie came back, he's too good. And same thing, Quinn Hughes is too good, and Pettersson's too good. Problem is they need major surgery around them. And major surgery, not minor surgery, that, hey, we're close and we're just going to nip and tuck here. Jimmy Rutherford came out and said, we need major surgery. He also said, we've got to deal with some things. Buyouts, like I'm thinking they're thinking Tyler Myers, and they've got to make some people
Ekman,
go
Larson,
away.
Ekman, you can't
they got to
make
some people go away.
Why? Does he got a lot
yeah,
left?
Yeah,
he's got
like four years left.
I think it's
almost $8 million.
Or something.
Yeah, they're stuck with him.
But the point being is they're in no man's land because they're too good to be bad, but they're not good enough to be on that next level.
Exactly.
If they have health next year of goalie that's healthy,
listen,
they look different.
I just said it
with one statement. It's a massive offseason, and I believe if they can get it together, they're playing playoff hockey in Vancouver, and I'm all in on the Canucks.
Credit the players. Credit Rick Tocchet.
Yes.
They're not going to tank. They're going to show up and play. That's the point I'm making is if you are a fan, you're looking at it saying, really, guys?
Now.
You're horrendous for 60 games,
now
you decide.
From a PR perspective, what's happening right now, it's doing a lot of people a lot of favors out there because...
I don't think it is.
You don't think people are watching that hockey team saying, no. At least this is something to be proud of?
I don't think so. I think if you watch... Vancouver Canucks fans have been praying for them to blow it up and tank.
I think
for
your
years.
Brain is... What's happening to your brain is what happened to Carlos.
No. No, I know I'm on the air, first and foremost. So I'm a step ahead of him.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're
saying. Vancouver fans are not stupid. They look at it and they say, this isn't good enough. I guarantee you they're saying, great, win now. And now they're going to reset and say, you know what, we're actually really good. And they're going to fall for the trap again.
I'm falling for the trap. Before we bring in our next guest, I want to hear the full part of it, please. Play it from the beginning.
He hasn't really been able to respond well from it. And then... Am I still on the air here?
Here's Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. You're on the air with us, CJ. Welcome to the program.
CJ, has your brain ever melted like that doing a hit?
Yes, it has. It
was what?
It was a live TV hit, and honestly, I just went totally blank.
Wow.
Oh. It feels so scary, because like, you're just looking around, and I just deer in a headlight.
Did you not have a lifeline, or...?
I did. I was working at the other network, and my lifeline was Sean McKenzie, who saved my bacon in that particular instance. So.
Oh, so it was a ringside. I was going to say, it wasn't a second intermission biggest show in the history of the country.
So Sean said to you, like, how's the game going, CJ? And you were just like,
big help, say?
Yeah, exactly. I literally couldn't come up with an answer, and he saw my face, and he just jumped in and started talking about something and got us back to safe ground.
That's a veteran move right there. Yeah, we did not do that for Koliakovo.
No, we started laughing.
Yeah, we did. And we
have an appreciation for it. We love it.
We love it. Yeah, and everyone does it. It happens, and Carlo had his moment to shine about an hour ago.
It happens to everybody. CJ, didn't you do? Remind me, wasn't it you and I your first like TV hit on the NHL Network? Wasn't that one of them?
Yes, it was like in 1988 or whatever the heck that was. It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. It was like you and I. And I think Mike Kelly was hosting. Like there was a lot going on back there. And there was a winger, Dan Hynote, came on, and he was beside me. And the producer started talking to him, and he started answering the producer live on TV. I don't want to talk about that.
That is very difficult.
It was like, we're live here. We're going to have to swing out of this. But it happens. It's live TV. It's live
TV, live radio. It's all good. It's all good. All right, CJ, let's make sure that doesn't happen, though, this time, all right? Let's see if we can get through this seamlessly. As for where the Leafs are at, home ice is effectively declared now. They're 7 points up. They have a game in hand. They still play Tampa, the second-last game of the season, but it's very likely at that point everything will be solidified. So what do you think the plan is here for Sheldon Keefe and company for the remaining 9 games?
Well, I think at some point they'll probably start to get a little more continuity in the lineup. You know, the one takeaway I've had from watching the last stretch and is, you know, obviously we understand they have all these defensemen, new players, they're trying to work things around. But, you know, there hasn't really been a consistent lineup. Now, you know, they've done okay. They got some results over the weekend. The big boys are rounding into shape. But I would think as we get into this last stretch of 8 or 9 games that, you know, at some point, Sheldon Keefe is going to want to kind of settle on a particular look that he feels comfortable with going into the playoffs because it's, you know, as crazy as it sounds, it's 3 weeks today that the Stanley Cup playoffs begin. And so it's you know, not that much time really for the final tune-up. And maybe if there's a positive here and, you know, we know never to take the Lightning for granted, but they've really struggled the last month. And, you know, so it's probably two teams looking to find their best game here in these last few weeks before they play it for real.
DJ, do you think Matt Murray gets one more crack to make an impression? He's such a fascinating guy because of the fact that he's won Stanley Cups in the past. And to me, I keep waiting for that game where I'm like, man, that's tough to turn away from him and him being your guy. Do you think he gets one more crack? And if you could somehow put some kind of odds on him taking advantage of it?
Whoa, that's a tougher one. I just don't know if he's going to be healthy, right? I mean, we've certainly seen him play some good games and good stretches, but he's also missed the big chunk of the season with various injuries. I think he gets another crack, though, and I would expect we'll see him play in the playoffs, too. I'm kind of thinking we'll see both of these guys, you know, right off the bat in the first round, and you know, it'll just be about who can maintain the net and then obviously how much success the team has. You know, but Murray has been a little better lately. I'm with you, though. You haven't maybe seen these games or like, okay, he's got to be your guy. And I think especially given that there's a strong likelihood now that game one's played at Scotiabank Arena, you know, I'm not one to put too much into home road splits, but it's hard to ignore all the success that Samsonov's had at home. And so you know, kind of the way I look at it, barring something unexpected happening, I wonder if maybe you just start game one with Samsonov at home and make your decisions from there, depending on how things go.
So there was an exchange between Sheldon Keefe and Michael Bunting yesterday. Towards the end of the game, Bunting, I don't believe, had another shift afterwards. Cameras picked it up. Keefe was kind of in his ear. Bunting at one point turned away and didn't seem to be paying much attention, or, you know, was effectively giving him the cold shoulder. What is your understanding of the relationship between Keefe and Bunting? What can we make of last night, and how might it apply to the final nine games?
Well, I can't see it as anything other than a positive in a strange way, just because Michael Bunting hasn't really played too well lately, and he's someone who, you know, I've talked to him about this. He needs to have an edge on to be at his best, and so I don't have any problem with him, you know, and Sheldon Keefe having a little bit of abrasiveness. I mean, we saw Nathan MacKinnon and Jared Bednar get into it, I remember, pretty memorably on the bench last year, and, you know, that's a star player and his coach, and those guys ended up sharing a Stanley Cup together afterwards. You know, clearly, I think Keefe is trying to get more out of Bunting. We've seen him sort of knocked out of a spot in the top six, at least a regular spot. And, you know, he hasn't had his best game there. And so, I don't think a little bit of confrontation is bad in this case. I'm sure that'll be something the reporters are all after them tomorrow when they're back at practice, just given the attention it's got. But, you know, for Michael Bunting, he's got to find that fire somewhere, and maybe this will help be the source of it.
What about the Morgan Rielly, we'll call it deployment, or, you know, the switching of the partners, and the way it was written up, I think, caused a stir. Just basically, I think Masters put the notes out, and it was Rielly and Shen. That was your third pairing, correct? And he could have...
Masters?
Yeah, Masters is responsible for this.
He's responsible for all this, because, to me, if you just put Rielly and Shen as the first pairing, I don't think it, like, I think it's like, oh, Shen's getting a little taste on that first pairing. The fact that he put it the third.
The demotion, according to Mark.
I think it rattled a lot of people. What did you make of it, and what do you make of the situation moving forward?
Well, you know, Mark can write him up whichever way he sees it. I don't think Morgan Rielly's on the third pairing of the team. Because the only thing that matters at the end of the night is the total ice time. And, you know, I know he played a little less in yesterday's game than he has this season, but, you know, it was back-to-back and all that. So, you know, I haven't known what to make of the defense in general. You know, I think it's been something consistent we've probably talked about the last few weeks, but, you know, just so much shifting. It's not just like you're trading out a third-pairing defenseman here and there. I mean, it's, you know, Rielly taking a seat for a game, Giordano sat for a game. There's really no flow there, and I don't know what their top six looks like, honestly. I don't know what the coaching staff has in mind. I don't know if they've decided on it. But, you know, I am willing to say with high degree of confidence that Morgan Rielly won't be on the third pairing when the chips are down.
No, he's playing. I think what Keefe might be a little bit disappointed by is that some of the guys fighting for position, I would say all of the guys, none of them have exceeded expectations since the trade deadline and played so well where you say, I can't possibly take him out of the lineup.
Right.
And if anything, it's gone the opposite way. And I think Timothy Liljegren is probably the prime example of that. And this is where I do wonder if the human element comes into it. You guys can speak to it. Sandin and Engvall were his boys. Like, those are two Swedish guys leaving the room. They get traded out. I don't know if that factors into his psychology, but on top of
it, in that league, Brian,
it shouldn't, but it doesn't mean it doesn't,
right?
But also Shen comes in, McCabe comes in, Gustafsson comes in, like, competition is on his doorstep, and something's up with his confidence level, specifically handling the puck. The amount of times he has overplayed a puck,
but
it's actually getting ridiculous. It's like every single game,
but
a significant mistake has happened.
But let's be logical about this. Dubas brought in three defensemen.
Yeah.
Three.
Yes.
That's what he thinks of his defensive core at the deadline.
That he needed to do that.
He needed to do that. Like,
right.
That's to me, that was telltaling as far as you.
But you got to man up, Noodles. You know that.
I know, but
anybody, it's like, okay, this guy, I'm going to show this guy that I'm not coming out of the lineup.
That's
failed
what
to
I think.
Do it.
That's
failed
what I'm
to
saying.
Do it.
Where do you stand on that, CJ? Like, how Liljegren, Hall, I guess those two in particular have responded to the challenge.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been. I think Liljegren, if I'm guessing, it's more the competition aspect and even losing his friends from the locker room, you know, as tough as that might be, you know, I think that he started looking over his shoulder. If you remember when the most recent set of trades were made with the defenseman, and McCabe joined the team and Gustafson, you know, Liljegren was scratched right away. I mean, the message was there right away that, he'd had a pretty good year, I'd say, up until the deadline period and probably felt as though he'd established himself and had a role on the team. And it's not to say he doesn't have one now, but it's certainly been thrown into a little bit more question with the extra bodies and the more experience that they've brought in. And, you know, it hasn't gone well. And I don't know if that's entirely between the years. You almost have to think it is because I can't think of any other explanation. I mean, he had kind of really stepped up and been what I thought was, they're the second pairing right shot option for them. And now, it doesn't look like he's probably starting the first game in the lineup, based on the way it's gone since that time. So, I think that's a big, big sign for me. And clearly what this team prioritized at the deadline was, as Dubas labeled it, competitiveness, but it's also guys with experience that have been there before. And, Liljegren still has not played very often in the playoffs. I think it was just a couple games last season.
With Chris Johnson, our TSN hockey insider. Prior to having you on, we were talking about Vancouver and their latest run. I think they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won a few games in a row. They look good. They look composed. Rick Tocchet is, getting love, which he deserves. But I'm not buying it in terms of extrapolating what this means into next season. O believes that they're a playoff team next year. If they're a playoff team based on what we've seen, would that suggest, CJ, that they're not actually going to make significant moves? Because I think that would be fool's gold. I think that would be a mistake. I think they're still a flawed team.
I said significant moves this summer are needed.
And then on top of that, then they're a playoff team. Okay, CJ, where do you stand on what we've seen out of Vancouver and how meaningful it actually is?
I'm with you. I'm not buying it at all just yet. And
negative Nancy. Negative Nancy. Go ahead, CJ.
Look, this was a softer stretch of their schedule that was telemarked even before they fired Bruce Boudreau. They were talking about that in that marketplace, how it was setting up that they dumped him just when they moved to an easier part of the schedule. It's not to bag on Rick Tocchet. I mean, look, I think he's a coach that a lot of people have been high on, and I'm sure he'll have success there, but I don't know that it's going to happen next year right out of the gate. And they were looking at trading JT Miller at the deadline. They didn't do it, but I think that those are conversations they revisit and look at in the summertime, and they still have cap issues, big time. And in order to get better, they're going to have to still, move out some salary one way or another. So, as O says, I think that there's going to be big-ish changes there. I'm not talking their main guys. It's pretty clear Pettersson's had a fantastic season. Quinn Hughes has been a monster for them. It's good to see Demko back playing and healthy. I think that those guys are safe, but around those players, I think that there's still change coming, and I don't know that they're one off season away in my eyes from, really being a playoff contender again next year.
I think surgery, major surgery, has to happen, but wouldn't it start with a guy like Brock Besser? Like, it's, I don't know how, and I'm not sure if you're privy to release that information, how close he was being traded at the deadline or not. But that would be a guy that, if you're talking about pieces or, that was part of that core, wouldn't he be a guy you circle and say you can get some value out of him?
I would think so. And look, my understanding, and I haven't checked in on this since the deadline, but right, he was welcome to a move at that time. I think the team was looking to try to find him somewhere else to play. I know that certainly multiple teams had conversations with the Canucks, about Besser leading up to the deadline. One of the issues was his cap hit, for future seasons. But, that could, sometimes those trades are easier to make in the offseason, depending what other moves happen around the league. I think that at his age, 25 or 26, he's still a piece that could be moved out of there. And, they got to figure out what they're doing on their blue line. I mean, there's talk, can they squeeze some life out of Oliver Ekman-Larsson? Are they looking to buy him out? I mean, what do they do with their blue line? I think probably will have more immediate impact on what happens next year. But, this is a nice run, and I'll give them credit enough for that. I mean, you're winning the games you can play, but, I still need to see a lot more from that organization before I think that they are on the path to where they want to be.
All right, CJ, we'll leave it there. Thank you, buddy.
All right, be well, guys.
There he is, Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider.
Throw in a couple, like, you forget, like that Mikheyev. Like, he's been on the IR.
Right.
But he actually, when he was playing, had a pretty good, start with them. The Russian, the Kuzmenko,
He's had a nice player. Really good year. They re-signed him.
They
right?
re-signed him to a two-year, I think.
Yeah, bridge deal.
Yep. But
Kuzmenko.
He's getting good opportunities, though. He's playing with the big boys.
He's a hell of a shooter.
He's got a something about him where it could be a bit of a Semin type deal.
Alex Semin?
Really? Where it's like,
you remember that guy?
I'm not trying to be negative about the guy, and his agent's probably going to send me a message, but negative. It just seems like...
negative. I like that guy. I like him a lot. I think he's a motivated player.
Do you remember that,
it's going well for him this year, but let's see him back it up.
I agree.
And that's all I'm going to say.
Sure. Yeah, of course. All right, Sam Mitchell coming up in 10 on the Raptors weekend. Scotty Barnes making a return. Gary Trent, it sounds like he'll still be out tomorrow. Kyle Lowry and the Heat are in town. They'll be tipping off tomorrow down at Scotiabank. So we'll get to that with Sam, among many other things throughout the NBA. And Gary Player taking a shot at the Masters.
Makes me sick.
Gary Player.
I hate him.
Taking a shot at the Masters. We'll get to that next. All right, our best bets brought to you by FanDuel later in the hour. Sam Mitchell will join us here in a few moments. Sam's played Augusta. I would assume Sam believes the Masters is either the best major or maybe the second best, maybe third best.
Dude, it's the best.
It's the best. For me, there's no question.
Well, it's the U.S. Best. I think the argument would be U.S. Open, the Masters.
For me, it's clear-cut Masters because it's first, because I have a love affair with the course. Right, it's a smaller field. For me, it's clear-cut Masters. I think if you were to say U.S. Open, then you might have to include the Open Championship because they're both Open Championships. Like the British Open, U.S. Open, it's similar, tough courses, different tracks. But Gary Player, who has won the Masters three times, by the way.
Gary
Player has come out and said the Masters is fourth, which means it's behind the PGA Championship. Which nobody on earth believes.
It's an idiotic thing to say by an idiot. And if I'm Augusta National, I say at the front door, oh, good evening, Jerry. You're not coming in this year after those comments. I think they would have the authority to
I don't
do
know.
That.
He's won it three times.
So what? Just say we're done with it. We're done with your crunches on the first tee.
Yes.
And we're done with your antics. Thank you very much, but you're not allowed
back. They can do is the ceremonial first tee, Jerry, you're out. You know, it's going to be Jack and Tom Watson or whatever, and you're out. You know, like, because remember,
I wouldn't have him hit a ceremonial first tee shot after that comment.
And he's had issues, too, because he had his son. And remember, his son was in there plugging different, like...
Didn't his son sue him, or there was some sort of, like...
No, Jerry's suing his kid, because his kid...
Stole art or something.
Yeah, he took, like, some artifact from him.
Right.
Well, but Gary Player also loves wearing Live Saudi Golf.
It's Saudi Golf, yeah. It's not Live, but he promotes... Saudi Golf, which is okay. You know, you get paid to do that. Clearly, he's a spokesman.
But why would he be so stupid to make that comment about the Masters?
But I don't get what the Masters has no bearing on what happens with LIV Golf. There's 12 or 14 LIV players that are going to be there. There's a bunch of past
champions. As I just said, regardless of anything, why would he come out and make that dumb comment?
I think, fine. If you love the European, like if you love the Open Championship because you grew up in South Africa and you grew up, you know, in that time zone, and that was your tournament growing up, fine. Like, if that's what you dreamt of doing, he's not alone. I'm sure the majority of European players, I know he's not European, but, you know, players that grew up in South Africa, Europe, et cetera, they might sit there and say, that's what I want to win, is the British Open. That is the pinnacle of golf. That's the original Open Championship. That's the one we want. Right. But to suggest the PGA Championship is ahead of the Masters... It's just Jerry Player being Jerry Player.
Okay.
He's got to be selling something. There's got to be some sort of angle here. Has to be an angle.
Barely above the Players Championship.
But the other angle here,
it's on par, effectively.
Here's a number for you. 1935. That's when he's born.
Oh,
he's 87 years old.
Yeah, he's still talking, man. He's still doing his thing.
He's 87. Like, he's not going to change. He's going to shoot from the hip. And who knows? It seems like he's a pretty clear guy at 87 as far as still.
Absolutely.
But this one is off the cuff. It's not.
I just think it's a ludicrous take. Like, to suggest the Masters is fourth is absurd. Absurd.
Yeah. Wow.
But he's Gary Player, and he's entitled to his opinion.
87 years old.
Yeah, because his son was selling something that it was like a power drink or an energy drink. And like Augusta went to him and said, well, it was blatant. Like he had like product placement at like the par 3 tournament.
Oh, really?
Be walking around with a can. And someone picked it off, and they're like, "Jerry, go tell your kid you're not. You can't do that. Like, it's Augusta right. National. We're all in white jumpsuits here. You can't have a billboard of right. you know whatever you're selling."
Gary's probably cut his son off.
And
that's
now,
what it is.
That's what's happened. He sued his kid because his kid, I guess, is I don't know what's going on with him. But anyway,
don't you think the kid would be smart enough to understand that the guy's 87? If you just play your cards right, God yeah. willing, that you might be in line to have a good life. Like, just don't be a dummy.
You would think he's probably already been entitled to a great life.
Yeah.
Like, Gary
yes.
Players was winning tournaments in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, but his whole brand is probably worth a lot.
Of course it is.
A lot.
Absolutely. Oh. Jerry Player. Sam will join us here in a moment. Raptors with a successful weekend. It's weird with Dwayne Casey versus Nick Nurse. Like, you can just tell it's not good, man. It's not good. Like, Casey was kind of tongue-in-cheek on Friday talking about Siakam stat stuffing, like being in the game during a blowout. He had a great game on Friday night. And I think most interpreted that as a shot at Nick Nurse. Like, right. why do you have your best player still on the court where the worst team in the league were getting dummied?
Yeah.
And
I like that term, stat stuffing.
Stat stuffing. It's a big term in the NBA.
Oof.
Stat stuffing.
That's tough, though.
It's a, you know what? Maybe with the greatest play in NBA history, you'd have to look this up. I think it was Ricky Davis. I want to say he was in Cleveland. He was a rebound away from a triple-double.
Yeah.
He went to his own backboard, shot the ball, and went up and picked up the rebound.
Really?
Thinking that that would qualify.
Well, Giannis had one of those this year. I don't know what it was. It was like, might have been to get 50. He had a little play where it was, I don't know, where he didn't have to shoot it, but he, like, they always well, have that.
Yeah, but that's different. You're going for 50.
Do what you can to get those
And do
stats.
It on the opponent's basket.
Yes.
If you go up and miss a shot on your own basket trying to acquire a rebound for a triple-double.
Devin
That's
Booker three or four
crazy.
Times has been in scenarios where they're blowing the team up.
That stuff just, it can happen. You're going for 50, 60. Listen, we got a guy on the line who watched Kobe put up 81.
Yeah.
81.
He was probably a stat stuffer himself, Sam.
Here's our buddy Sam Mitchell. Were you a stat stuffer?
Look, I have a good, y'all look, I have a good sense of humor because, you know, and you're lucky that it was Kobe Bryant who scored 81 because if it was a guy of my talent, not to put myself down, you wouldn't be talking to me right now because I would either be in the same asylum or I'd be 6 feet under.
Yeah, what a night that was, man. That one.
What did you say to the fella, Sam, during that game? Is it just like, what are you guys doing?
This is what's crazy. I remember it vividly because we were winning the game and we had never won in L.A. The Raptors had not won in L.A. in forever and a day. And we was winning that game in the fourth quarter. And all I was trying to figure out as a way is, you know, how to slow him down without committing three people. We had committed two. But, guys, people kept saying, well, why do you run three? It is an NBA game. You know, there's other guys out there making 10 and 12 and $13 million. And if you leave them under the basket by themselves, I think they can dunk the ball. So it's not like high school where you can send the whole team at one guy. So it was a real moment. It took me a while for it to digest and for me to wrap my mind around it. And at the end of the day, all what made me come to terms with it was that a few years later, when I was doing radio for Sirius XM Radio, myself and Justin Terminator, and we did an interview with Kobe during All-Star break. And to him, it was no big deal. He was like, Coach, that was just a game. That's what I had to do that night for us to win. He never talked about it. He never gloated about it. It was just as if he scored 30. And I realized at that moment, why am I going to make a big deal out of something that for him, it was a means to an end? That's what I needed that night for us to win. And that's what I did. So his attitude about it was able to make me come to terms with it.
Sam, you know both gentlemen. What do you think Dwayne Casey thinks of Nick Nurse and the Raptors and coming back here? Do you think there's some man tension between those two?
I don't know man tension because Nick was on that staff. But I would just say, just wishing, if you're Dwayne, wishing that you might have had the opportunity to coach the team that Nick had. So probably a little envy a little bit, which is a normal human emotion. But I think Dwayne is just too classy of a guy to let anything other than that. You know, look, man, I'm happy when my friend wins the lottery. but I'm happier if I win it. You know what I mean? Just one of those things. So I just know Dwayne, he's too classy of a guy to let it get at him any deeper than that. But a normal reaction would be for you to be a little envious, man, of a guy, because you always felt like that if you had that opportunity to coach that team, you could have went further and possibly won a championship. So that's understandable.
Yeah, and listen, Detroit, like they, whew, man, they got injuries. They just can't get out of it, Sam. Like they're the worst team in the league, and they're in the running for Victor. If not, they're going to end up with probably the second, third pick, and you get Cunningham back. I mean, do you have any hope for that organization 2-3 years down the road?
Well, guys, if they get the number one or number two pick, that kid, Scoot Henderson, is pretty good, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a – the problem is he plays point guard, and he's big. You know, he's kind of like Dwayne Wade at the point guard position, the biggest physical version, probably a little bit better athlete than Dwayne. So they will have some decisions because I think Cade, and you could play those two guys in the backcourt, but then you got a young kid like Ivy. But I like what Detroit's doing, man. They picked up you know, I like their young talent. I like that they've added James Wiseman to the bunch. I think he just needs some playing time. He hadn't played in 2 years. I think if they can get the one or two pick, obviously that'll take them to a new level. So I just think the Detroit Pistons are one pick away and probably a free agent signing here or there for, you know, need some veteran leadership or something. And I think they can be in the mix like Orlando, man. I think we all believe that in the next 2 years, Orlando is going to be a team that you're going to have to deal with. And I think if Detroit managed this thing right and get the right pick at the right free agents, I think in 2 years they could be in the mix.
With Sam Mitchell, so I saw an internal note here at TSN today about Van Vliet, you know, Fred's stats and his production since Poeltl came over. Jakob's been here for 15 games. Van Vliet's averaging 20 points, 9 assists, and almost, you know, about 3.5 threes per game. And the Raptors are outscoring teams by 13.4 points per 100 possessions when Van Vliet and Poeltl are on the court. Like, those are substantial numbers. And obviously we knew when Poeltl came in, it was going to filter throughout the lineup. But what is it about, you know, Van Vliet in particular and his role, do you think that has allowed him to benefit so greatly with Poeltl in the lineup and on the court with him?
Well, first of all, you got a rim protector. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if Freddie get beat, he know back then, he could, behind him, he got a 7'2 guy that knows how to wall up it to protect the rim. Second, people never understood this. Big guys take up space. They eat up space. The floor is actually more open for Freddie now because wherever Poeltl is, you got to box him out. You got to account for that size, man. And so it gives Freddie, and then when Freddie comes off that screen and roll with him, he's so big, it's hard to just switch a little guard onto him because he just eat elbows right in his face. So I think that creates more space. So I just think, and it's something that we've been saying for the last couple of years, the Raptors need a big. And look, think about this. He's not an all-star big. He's just a very good basketball player with size. And so adding him to the team, it has made everybody better, I think. It made this team better. And I honestly believe that the Raptors, if they could get to six, you know, and if you look at it, they're not far away. They just have some bad losses. That Indiana loss, think about this.
If they were to beat Indiana,
they would right now be sitting in the eighth spot with a very good chance of getting that sixth spot because Brooklyn right now is reeling. And, you know, I just think the opportunity is there for them. Chicago is playing good right now. Mm-hmm. But you would have to believe if the Raptors can get to six in a first-round matchup, it looks like you'll be sitting there with Philly, which would be tough, but you do have a 7'2" body and a good player to just throw some size at Joel Embiid.
Well, and maybe Embiid won't play. Right, like he's not going tonight, Sam. I mean, it's so disappointing for NBA fans where you got, although to be fair to him, I applied the same, you know, disappointment to Denver about a month ago when Jokic didn't play against Giannis because they had played the night before and Mike Malone came out and said, effectively, what do you want me to do? I can't play him back to back, which to me was completely bogus. And it's bogus tonight. And I know they had a back to back on the road Friday and Saturday, and then now they've flown into Denver. But everyone wants to see him beat Jokic. Everyone wants to see it, and Embiid's not going to go tonight.
That's
like, what's up with this?
The only reason you want to turn it on. I'm disappointed, too. And especially the way Joel Embiid laid wood on him in Philadelphia. I mean, he took him to the woodshed, and you would think If I'm the Joker, I would be standing outside the locker room saying, "You got to play."
Right.
I just can't. The only time I get a chance to get you back is if we both make it to the finals. I can't wait that long. You got to play tonight. That's what I would be doing. You got to play.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
not going to happen, man.
Sammy, what do you think's happening in Dallas? I mean, Kyrie, unfortunately for him, he's like, I thought he was going to get there. It was going to be quiet. They were going to have success. And now it's like their coach is just like, I don't know what the hell's going on out there. What are you seeing in Dallas? Luka looks a mess.
I see with Dallas, the same thing I saw with Houston with James Harden. Everybody keep trying to put a ball handler with James Harden and Luka. No, they need other people around them to be better. What they need is a big. Look at James Harden game now that he's got Joel Embiid, a true center. Okay? Luka is going to dominate the ball. Luka is not one of those players that's ever going to play without the ball. Why? He's had the ball since he was 13. So he's always got to have the ball, and he should. He makes everybody better. So instead of trying to go get another guy to handle the ball, go get you a big and then put better players in those positions around Luka. So in the moments when teams load up to try to take things away, he has other good players around him. But stop trying to put a superstar guard around Luka. It doesn't work. I mean, because when the other guy doesn't have the ball, he's standing also. So I just think the thought process is wrong about the type of superstar player they're trying to put around Luka. If it was me, I would be trying to put a young big around Luka.
Well, last night, you know, moving on to the Lakers and their situation, LeBron returns. You'd seen the LeBron James of feet doctor. I don't know if you've ever seen that doctor, Sam, but LeBron went to see the LeBron James of feet doctors. So he comes back, he comes off the bench, only second time in his career. I can't imagine it happens for a third time, considering they lost last night. Patrick Beverley, you know, he's gloating. He felt good about that win. But now that LeBron is back, and there was concern he may be out for the regular season, what is your read on the Lakers? They've been running pretty hot. They're running away with fouls. You know, a lot of people are pointing that out. Right. Ever since that Boston game and the missed call where I think it was Tatum clipped LeBron at the end of the game, they're lapping the field in terms of the amount they're getting to the line. Do you think they still have a chance of getting into that sixth seed if they're a play-in team? What happens with the Lakers here?
I think they have a chance, whether they're the sixth seed, the play-in, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because without LeBron James, look how this team played. If LeBron James can come back and add what LeBron James adds to a team, nobody wants to play them. They can be a dangerous team. The Lakers has had the best defense since that trade, guys, since All-Star break, since they brought those guys over, since trade deadline. So their defense is on point. They just need some more consistent offense. And what they really need, guys, they need D'Angelo Russell to be healthy. As much as they need LeBron, they need D-Russ, because D-Russ will score. Not that he's a great defender, but they've put enough defenders around D'Angelo to where they can hide him now. So they need a healthy D'Angelo Russell. They need a healthy LeBron. And if they can get healthy, we say that about a lot of teams, but specifically this team, they are going to be hard to beat, because Rob Pelinka addressed every need that they had with that trade. So to me, he should get the GM of the year. And I know everybody's saying, well, Phoenix got Kevin Durant, but Phoenix were already a playoff team. The Lakers was taking a nosedive fast, and he's right at the ship with those trades. And think about it. He gave up one player and one first-round pick.
Sam, before we get you out of here, last time we had you on, I was tasked to ask you a question. I will let Jeff O'Neill ask you the question.
You know it, playa. Give us the update on the golf game. What's your skills
it
like?
It sucks. Excuse my language. It's terrible.
What happened?
I've been going through a little swing change of my own.
No.
And I messed myself up.
What are you trying to do with the swing change, Sam?
Dude, I've been playing this friend of mine, and he out driving me by 100 yards, and I hit it good. And I can't accept it. And he's younger than me. He's built like freaking The Rock. And he hit a drive the other day we played 363 yards.
And come I hit my drive. You playing with Roy McIlroy?
God,
who are you playing with?
Dude, this dude, he tried to play on tour a little bit, but he wasn't that good. But he hits it a mile. He hits it a ton. And guys, the clubs that he played with are called sub-70s. I've never heard of them, but they're the heaviest blades. I can't even get them in the air when I try to hit one of his clubs.
Sam, we got to get you up here to TaylorMade, man.
Yeah.
That's where it's
at. Yeah. Yeah, I'm playing them PXGs right now, man. I need some TaylorMades. Them PXGs, man, I'm all messed up.
Enough. Yeah, that, we don't want to hear that, man.
I'm all shook up.
You start messing with that swing, you start becoming...
You just play your own game, Sam. Yeah, you know can't, that, man.
I know, I cut my own throat. Guys, I did it to myself.
Yeah.
Like most of the problems in life, we do it to ourselves.
That's right, man. You start going Butch Harmon on your own swing, you're screwed. Like, you're screwed.
Yes, I'm disappointed to hear that, Sam.
Yeah,
that usually you have positive updates, man. And now you stink.
Dude, I went to the range today. I think I may have found something, but I got to keep working on this.
All right, we'll let you go find more of it if you can. We'll do it again soon. Guys. Thank you, Sam. There's Sam Mitchell, TSN Raptors and NBA analyst.
I love an amateur saying that. I went to the range and I found something.
I found something. Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's no better feeling, though, than flushing your range session and going to the first tee. But the second you screw up that first drive, you realize it's completely meaningless.
Yeah, like, I also understand the feeling of being a pretty good player and getting just crushed off the tee. I used to hit like a little butter fade, and I moved to Florida with the wind, and guys were out driving me by 100 yards. I'm like, I got to do something.
Yeah.
Can't compete.
It is difficult.
100 yards, though?
When you, like 100 yards, that's a massive drive, man. Like, if you play with guys who bomb the ball and you just can't keep up.
Who is this cat he was playing with? King Kong Bundy?
Honestly. 363, those are...
There's no way.
It can't be. It's got to be like downwind, downhill, elevated tee.
Still, that's a
If it's
mile.
Over 300, it's monster.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's a monster. Shout out to Sam Burns as well. You know, he got off the snide. He hadn't been playing that well this year.
Got it done.
He got it done against Cameron Young. You know, which is really cool? Both of them are going to be at the RBC Canadian Open. They're both RBC guys. They're
good
both committed.
Them.
They're both going to be up here. So Sam Burns and Cameron Young will be at Oakdale, among other great players. Today's Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams in the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I'm looking at the NBA board tonight. I like Indiana +7. They're at home against Dallas. Luka, like, he doesn't want to play. Something's weird with Luka,
yeah,
man.
Really weird.
And, like, you can't rely on Kyrie. He's not going to pull him up. Like, it's... Indiana's not a great team, but they're at home +7. I'll take it. I think Milwaukee destroys Detroit tonight. You got to lay a big number at -12, but I think they win big. And I like the over in the Philly game, even without Embiid. I think a lot of points go up. 229.5. I like the over in that game. Today's Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. We'll come back and recap a busy afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, it's been a good one today. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes for helping out. Everyone for tuning in, radio, TV, podcast, web.
Carlo, our boy Carlo.
Carlo supplying us with a great drop that will now be in existence forever. Yeah, we'll be playing it forever.
Am I still on the air here?
How does that work out tomorrow morning? Like, Korolnik's got to play it.
If you're Korolnik, 100 times.
They're going to play it 100 times.
You have to play it. The question, and Koliakov was a great guy, and he's self-deprecating. Like, Carlo gets it. It's funny.
Yeah.
And I would expect if I did that on their show, they would run it 15,000 times.
Yes.
And then I'd get to 4 o'clock, and I'd say, you got to hear what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's good. They've got to lead the show with it tomorrow.
Yeah,
but it will be a soundbite.
It has to be.
He hasn't really been able to respond well from it. And then, am I still on the air here?
he sent me a note saying all he heard was silence, but I was thinking...
What else would you hear?
I know, you're the one talking.
Yeah, it's not a live mic at a stadium.
No, but...
It's not a Kiss concert.
You guys know when you're doing something and you know that the host has turned the mic off, like... But
that's
I think
valid.
In his
I
mind,
have never thought that or... Anything like that calling into a radio?
There's a little hum if you have the mic on, which is what he had. If you're on the phone, I don't think you would notice it. A little hum.
Yeah.
Again, though, we turn our mics on and off a lot, like during breaks.
To talk,
obviously,
but we also have to communicate
exactly
during an interview.
Hey, here's where we're going, or you got that, or and I don't think that's what we were doing. I think we were actually just listening, and we happened to have our mics off. Like there was no reason for it, and it was like. Take it home, man. What do you got? Like, where are you going? And then...
But he didn't know where he was
going. Know where he
lost
was going.
His
that was concerning.
That's what it was.
But anyway, it's a great time of year, right? We got baseball starting up on Thursday. We got the Masters in a couple of weeks. Masters week. Actually, this time next week, it's Masters week. Next Monday, they're in Augusta.
Wow.
And the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, beginning 3 weeks tonight. You got the NBA playoffs in a couple of weeks. Whew.
Lots coming around.
It's going to be a good one, man.
My favorite time of the year.
I agree with you. I love the NFL, I will admit. I love, you know, training camps opening up, baseball playoffs. There's a lot of great things going on.
Masters mixed in with Stanley Cup hockey.
That's the thing. You get Masters, Stanley Cup, and baseball starting, so they're back.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I don't think you can compete with this.
Lots to watch.
Like the best time of year. And the NFL draft is in a few weeks. That's so true. The NFL does show up on the radar, right? They take over a weekend. And there's going to be a lot of movement at the draft.
Well, there's going to be a Bedard watch in a couple weeks.
That's another thing. We're a month away from the lottery as well.
Are people doing simulators at home?
I don't know. We haven't done it because the Leafs have been so good for so long, we stopped doing it.
Yeah, but we for the longest time, we were doing those simulators.
We did it once a week.
I would think if you're in Montreal, you have to be doing it daily.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is, you know, in Columbus, I'm sure they're paying attention. In Arizona, who's paying attention? Anaheim. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, who's doing it down there? I'm not sure. Chicago, they're probably doing it. But in Montreal, for sure. Montreal, I think, is fifth last. Like, they get the fifth best odds of getting this kid.
That would be, I mean, that'd be, don't they have two picks, too?
They have Florida's pick as well. And Florida, it looks like, is going to miss.
Well, they're hanging in. They got a big one against Ottawa tonight.
That's right.
So
they need to
Florida's
run the table.
Three points back.
They're three back of Pitt and four back of the Islanders. They do have a game in hand on Pitt, a couple on the Islanders.
I think
but they
it's
get
between
going.
Them and Pitt.
They got it. Yes, I agree.
Because I'm not sure.
I think the Islanders are going to get in.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you to everyone tuning in today. Radio, TV, podcast, web. We appreciate it. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.